KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is CrossCurrents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Hayward.
Richmond.
San Pablo.
Yeah, San Pablo.
I live in Novato.
Emeryville.
Rock Ridge.
Coming up, the cannabis industry is causing a rush of businesses. Can government regulations create a fair marketplace?
There's nothing about cannabis or capitalism that has ever been fair.
Then an Oakland company tries to measure if you've been driving while high.
The holy grail will be to find some way, some scientifically robust way to determine level of intoxication.
And we'll hear some parting words from KALW's longtime cannabis correspondent.
Let this stage of the rocket fall off so that the payload can continue further up into the future.
That's all coming up today on Cross Currents. Cannabis enthusiasts are counting down to the new year, anticipating a new era of legal marijuana. After being treated like criminals for decades, marijuana dealers are going legit. But get this, with more than 3,000 medical and recreational dispensaries across the country, only 1% of them are owned by people of color. 1%. That's according to a 2016 report by BuzzFeed News. Oakland is trying to change that by giving people who are impacted by the war on drugs a leg up in the marijuana business permitting process. But permits alone can't create equity or successful businesses. And if Oakland's cannabis businesses fail, fewer people will benefit from the larger goals of job creation and tax revenue promised by legalization. KALW's Holly J. McDeed reports.
Andre Shavers says everything he knows about the marijuana business he learned from hawking soda to fans in the bleachers of the Oakland Coliseum and hustling candy at school.
You know, it's as far as fulfilling their need and order and making sure that they're happy at the end. Everything is taken care of.
Now he runs a cannabis delivery service called The Medical Strain.
I think the Girl Scout cookies is one of the favorites, and then Gorilla Glue number 4.
But Shavers' entrepreneurial spirit came at a cost. In 2007, police found 7 grams of marijuana in his home. He was sentenced to 5 years probation. He calls this racial profiling.
The profiling, it was to an extreme around that time. For them to punish you for those small amounts, such as what I was punished for, like, it's kind of like obscene, like, wow.
It's not just his imagination. People like Shavers, young, black, a resident of East Oakland, were more likely to be arrested for marijuana crimes in Oakland. Marijuana use is roughly equal among black people and white people across the country. But in 2015, African Americans made up a disproportionate number of the city's marijuana arrests, 77%. Now that the marijuana market is going professional, the city is tasked with issuing permits for new marijuana businesses. So Oakland officials designed an equity program. The city will issue half of its permits to people impacted by marijuana-related arrests or enforcement. But what the equity program doesn't provide, at least not right away, is capital, education, or real estate. Organizations like the Hood Incubator aim to bring more people of color into the legal cannabis industry. They host legal clinics, business training courses, and public policy parties, like this one at an art gallery in downtown Oakland.
If you're interested in Oakland, stand up and shake around like this. Stretch it out.
James Anthony is a guest speaker here. He's a cowboy hat-wearing cannabis attorney. He has the kind of energy you'd find in a Richard Simmons workout video.
I need your brains, I need your bodies, I need your blood, I need your engagement. I need you focused. Okay.
You'd think everyone here would be on board with the city's equity program, but the devil is in the details. And the city's efforts to help equity applicants find space to do business has non-equity applicants scrambling. General applicants can still get a leg up in the permitting process if they provide free rent to equity applicants like Shavers.
You gotta either give away 1,000 square feet, which you probably don't have, or you gotta pay somebody's rent somewhere else for 1,000 square feet.
In Oakland, at least, almost everyone agrees with the goal of helping people who were unfairly punished by the war on drugs. But they disagree on exactly how to give them the best chances of success. Businesses need to profit or they fail. Anthony says the equity requirements ask so much of cannabis entrepreneurs that the city's rules set up small businesses for failure. His advice? Anyone who isn't an equity applicant or who can't provide space for someone who is should set up shop somewhere else.
But everybody else is not equity qualified. You're done. You need to go somewhere else. Come on down. We'll figure it out. There's 540 local governments in California. You ain't stuck in Oakland.
Chip Moore, the CEO of 420 Blackbirds, is in the crowd nodding along in agreement.
There's nothing about cannabis or capitalism that has ever been fair.
After 2 years of searching, Moore finally has a warehouse in West Oakland. He plans to open a cannabis cultural center that he says will include the largest dispensary in the world. But first, he needs a license, and Oakland is only offering permits for 8 new brick-and-mortar dispensaries. Moore says the equity process is messing with his chances.
Although I am a Black CEO, I don't qualify for the equity permitting program.
That's because he lives in Berkeley. Moore has no faith in capitalism or free enterprise to level the playing field, but he thinks he can do it himself. He plans on hiring and training people from West Oakland and giving them tools to make it in the cannabis industry. He says that would make a bigger difference than any city policy ever could.
Oakland has narrowed it that we're cutting off opportunities. And that whole, circular firing squad of a, cannabis fairness project. This is where it's leaving an African-American CEO who's trying to make a difference in West Oakland.
Everyone's grumbling. More because equity applicants are in line ahead of him to get a permit, just because of where he lives. Shavers because of lack of affordable commercial real estate. I met Shavers in his lawyer's office in downtown Oakland. Shavers talks to his attorney, Roy Stanley, before he makes most business moves.
We've heard horror stories about, unscrupulous lawyers and other people saying, I can find you a Black person.
The equity program is a flawed bureaucratic system, but it's one way to balance the odds for Shavers and others and give him the chance he needs to build his business. In the end, after consulting his lawyer, Shavers decided not to team up with a non-equity applicant, find his own space, and strike out on his own. For Cross Currents in Oakland, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Holly is KALW's justice reporter. Reach out to her at justice@kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. Let's turn now to KALW's new California Speaks project. We received many calls last week about the legalization of marijuana, including this provocative one.
My first name is Gotta, G-O-T-T-A. I'm in Bolinas, California. And the people I've been around for 40 years with marijuana drive stoned. They cannot stop at stop signs. They seem to drive fine otherwise. They're going to get stopped when this becomes legal, and there will be more people put into jails because the police will know that they can target individuals with pot smells coming from their cars. And people don't think it's a serious offense to have a DUI, but it is extremely serious, and it ruins one's life.
Thanks for sharing those thoughts with California Speaks, Gata. And they bring up some interesting questions, because when it becomes legal to sell recreational marijuana in the state on January 1st, the laws about driving impaired by marijuana remain the same. That is to say, pretty hazy. You can't drive, quote, under the influence, end quote. But what does that mean? And how much influence is too much? KALW's transportation reporter Eli Wirtschafter discovered an emerging industry trying to solve that problem.
My friend Meg Schwarzman used to bike through this intersection in Berkeley almost every day.
We're at the corner of Bancroft and Fulton.
Then, last February, she was in a crash that almost killed her. She had an 11-month-old baby at home, so she was being an extra careful biker. She was wearing a Dayglow green jacket and a new helmet over her curly hair.
So this intersection is where I was hit. The driver was behind me and he ran over me from behind, trapping me under the car and dragging me 60 feet across the intersection.
The driver was a medical cannabis user. He told police he had smoked before getting in the car.
He actually was high enough he didn't know he'd hit me.
Firefighters pulled Meg out from under the car just in time to save her life. Her injuries included 20 broken ribs, 2 collapsed lungs, and skull fractures around her left eye and cheek.
They'd called in the fatal accident investigation team. They didn't expect me to survive.
Meg recovered completely, apart from some serious scars. But she's worried that as marijuana is legalized, there will be more stoned drivers on the road.
We have some deterrence with alcohol in that we have breathalyzer tests and legal consequences. And there are legal consequences for driving high also, but there aren't good tests for it.
In California, the consequences for driving drunk and driving high are the same. But while there's a clear blood limit for alcohol, there's no such standard for marijuana.
Marijuana is very different than alcohol.
This is Jolene Foreman, a lawyer with the Drug Policy Alliance.
With alcohol, there's a very clear correlation between the amount of drinks you have and your gender and body weight and what your level of impairment is.
You drink a glass of wine and the alcohol shows up in your blood. It also shows up in your brain. It impairs your ability to drive. And then over time, the effects wear off. The alcohol disappears from your brain and your blood too.
Marijuana works totally differently, where it can stay in your blood for days and even weeks after you've consumed it.
Besides that, THC, the chemical in marijuana that gets you high, can affect people really differently.
There is no clear correlation between THC levels in the blood and driving impairment.
On average, marijuana does make most people worse drivers, especially 20 to 40 minutes after smoking. But measuring THC isn't a good way to tell how much worse. Now, that didn't stop Washington and Colorado from setting a THC limit for drivers. But California went the other way. Here, there's no numerical limit on THC. Instead, the law says you can't drive under the influence of any drug. Period. A conviction depends on what an officer observes, like the car smells like pot or a physical sobriety test.
Where you see people, you know, touching their fingers to their nose or standing on one leg.
Some officers are trained to identify specific signs of marijuana use, like dilated pupils. But Andrea Roth, a law professor at UC Berkeley, says those tests are relatively subjective. And because of that, there's potential for racial bias in how they're enforced. Cops already pull over Black and Hispanic drivers at higher rates. Roth says an objective test could help prevent innocent drivers from getting DUIs.
There's less risk of racial bias at the point of determining whether somebody is intoxicated, if there's a machine-measurable result.
As marijuana becomes legal, there's growing demand for an objective test, one that really works.
The holy grail will be to find some way, some scientifically robust way to determine level of intoxication.
A bunch of companies are chasing after that holy grail. One of them is headquartered in downtown Oakland, right in the heart of the new cannabis economy.
If we walk down this way a little bit towards Telegraph, we'll hit one of the dispensaries, then there's multiple other ones within a couple of blocks of here.
Mike Lynn is a trained ER doctor turned entrepreneur, but he doesn't make cannabis chocolates or THC lollipops. Lynn co-founded a company called Hound Labs.
Come on in, I'll show you.
And they make this.
Oops. This is our Hound Labs marijuana breathalyzer.
It's a twofer. It measures levels of both THC and alcohol. The two substances together have a stronger effect on drivers than either one alone. The device looks a bit like a black plastic tape dispenser with a tube sticking out.
And you blow through that tube, it'll make a noise telling you that you're blowing properly.
THC and breath comes in tiny concentrations. It's hard to detect, and there isn't much research published yet. But Lynn says the Hound Labs device can measure it. And he says, unlike with blood, THC stays in breath only a few hours.
Why that is, nobody really knows. We just know that when you have THC in your breath, you've used pot very, very recently, and you're much more likely to be impaired.
The Hound Labs test doesn't prove someone's actually impaired, but it could still serve as evidence someone used cannabis recently. Hound Labs hopes to sell the breathalyzer to police departments starting next year, including to some in the Bay Area.
We're contacted by departments all over the country and, frankly, multiple countries outside the U.S. as well.
A marijuana breathalyzer could mean big business. Hound Labs has raised about $14 million in venture capital. But not everyone's buying into the breathalyzer idea, like Dale Geringer. He's the head of California Normal, which supports more permissive marijuana laws.
You might have it on your breath, but does that mean that you're actually impaired?
Geringer says the most important thing in setting a DUI law is how risky someone's behavior is. And marijuana, he says, just isn't that big an increased risk.
Less than the risk of having two other people in the car with you, not to mention the risk of being a driver under 25 or being a male driver.
Those risk numbers are disputed by different studies, but most show marijuana having only a small effect on driving. Geringer says for marijuana, or any drug, we need a way to measure if you're really safe to drive, not just if there's a chemical in your system.
I actually have an app to do it in my pocket here.
Yes, there are apps. This one's called My Canary.
My Canary. Okay, so here it is, all right?
It asks him to remember a series of numbers and then do a balancing test.
Cross my arms in front of my body like King Tut, then raise my dominant foot.
Geringer is on a statewide highway patrol task force that will suggest policies for drug DUIs. He says apps like this one could give a more fair assessment of whether someone is impaired, no matter what they've used. And it could help people measure their own impairment. My friend Meg, who was hit by a stoned driver, says we need not just better testing, but also better public awareness.
There's been such a cultural shift because of medical marijuana that it's a substance that can have so many helpful applications that we're maybe losing sight of some of the places that we actually need to be really cautious about it.
In Meg's case, there was no question the driver was high. He failed a sobriety test, his car smelled like weed, and he owned up to smoking before driving.
What I've heard him say is that he sort of dismissed how seriously the pot affected him.
The driver was a professional actor. Now he's writing a presentation which he'll give at local schools. It's about the story of the crash.
How much harm it's possible to cause with a simple bad decision.
A state-funded study estimates that a quarter of legal cannabis buyers will be people who weren't buying it before. Meg hopes that they'll be careful when they get behind the wheel. In Berkeley, I'm Eli Wirtschafter for Cross Currents.
Eli is KALW's transportation reporter. Have a tip you want to send him? Email him at transportation@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Long before California legalized adult-use marijuana, KALW had a cannabis correspondent. It's Stephen Short, and he's actually the longest-standing contributor to the KALW News Department. But today, Stephen Short is stepping down, taking a pause in his work with us to explore other pastimes. Stephen has played a big role around here. He publishes the Cannabis News Roundup on our website every Friday. He curates the local music on Cross Currents every day. And he's made dozens of stories about issues from the science of marijuana-based edibles, to same-sex marriage, to his series called The Source, exploring the origin of names in the San Francisco Bay Area, from Vallejo to Larkspur to Dogtown. KALW's Hannah Baba sat down with our resident historian, Stephen, to talk about his work at the station.
Let's go back to the beginning of your first involvement with KALW. What can you take us back in time and remember when you first kind of became involved and why? What brought you here?
Do we go back in time? The calendar pages are flipping and flipping.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to the year of 2003, I think it was.
That is a long time ago.
No, I had just recently moved to San Francisco and wondered what I was going to be doing.
From where?
Oh, I moved from Lake Tahoe. Naturally, having been a longtime fan of public radio wherever I was, I had already become a member of KALW, so I got the program guide. And so actually the involvement, though, was by listening to the weekend music programs, Folk Music and Beyond, A Patchwork Quilt, and Dori Stein's Tangents. Those, I listen to those regularly. Minds Over Matter, I would call in and answer once in a while. Yes. So it was as a listener that I got involved. But then having contributed and receiving the program guide, there was a message down on one of the pages that Holly Kernan wanted to try to start a volunteer news department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but initially her idea was to get retirees, train them how to do radio stories, with the idea that they both had the time and experience and interests in certain topics, and then become radio reporters. And
Holly Kernan is the former news director at KLW.
Our founding news director.
And now she heads news at KQED. Uh-huh. Just to let people know who we're talking about.
Right. So that was, seeing that and actually having studied radio TV broadcasting with a journalism minor in college, I'd never really done broadcasting. So this was my chance. Now, I didn't know what I'd be doing, but I certainly didn't think I'd be on the air. I thought I'd be behind the scenes at the local radio station in some manner.
Mm-hmm.
But, here I am.
So you've been here for almost 15 years, and these are your final days with us here at KLW. What can you say over the years has impacted you as a person? How has KLW affected you? Your life?
Oh, it's given me a personality. I mean, there are people who recognize me now. I was at a lecture not too long ago, and people were always saying, "So, what do you do?" And I just said, "Well, I'm with KALW," and they said, "Are you on the air?" That's always the first question.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yes, I'm with Cross Currents," and then they couldn't place me, but because of those promos that they'd run throughout the week for the Cannabis News Roundup, I actually had to say, "This is Stephen Short from Cross Currents." Before, I know that voice. Well, I had to put on my radio voice before they would recognize who I was. But this, being involved with a radio station has given me an opportunity to get involved, to get to know people in the local music scene, which I have really, really enjoyed. There's a group that I have breakfast with now. Now, if I hadn't been connected with a radio station, that wouldn't happen. I'm not a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one example of something that...
What do you leave with? What thought do you leave with?
Well, without breaking into my way, I've done my part. I think I've done my contribution. And I'm getting older. So I should move aside and let somebody else, let this stage of the rocket fall off so that the payload can continue further up into the future.
I like that. I like that visual.
That's KALW Stephen Short in conversation with Hana Baba. Today is Stephen's last day, for now anyway, contributing to KALW News. You can find his final Cannabis News Roundup this Friday at KALW.org, and that's also where you can find some of our favorite short stories. Stephen, you've brought so much joy, wit, perspective, and wisdom to our newsroom and our audience, and you've really meant a lot to me personally. You're an original. You're invaluable. Thanks for being you. Including Stephen, our team today includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Jackie Sajiko, James Rollins, and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music, it's by indie rock band Junk Parlor. They share their sound from Eugene to LA, Reno to Seattle, but they mostly focus on their home base here in the Bay Area. Junk Parlor will be playing at the Intimate Club Deluxe in The Hate in San Francisco on Thursday. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.